Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field as Packers-Seahawks is just a few days away now, Wes. 3:25 p.m. Central Time Sunday at Lambeau Field. And kind of a day to talk about what's going on in the trenches. And when you start with the Green Bay Packers offensive line, potentially some good news as T.J. Lang, the starting right guard, the most veteran member of the Packers offensive line, has started to work his way back into practice, doing some drills and whatnot on a bad foot that's caused him to miss the last few ball games. And give us the latest on Lang.
Yeah, really, this is the first chance we had to talk to T.J. Since he injured his foot last month against Tennessee, ended up breaking it on that kind of scrum pile that developed in really an awkward-looking play. If you go back and look at it, was kind of, you could tell he got rolled up on, but he was sort of on his knees. We were joking about afterwards, there was, I think, one of the defensive players from the Titans was actually holding him up, and he's like, he couldn't really figure out if he was trying to be helpful or what exactly was going on there in that moment, or if the guy didn't know what to do with him. But whatever the case may be, has missed the majority of the last four games now, but is 4 weeks away from that injury. So got back on the practice field for the first time on Wednesday. This is a guy that, Mike, and you've seen it, you've covered him longer than I have, does not want to miss games, has only missed two games since he became a starter in 2011, I think only six in his career up until the injury. So for him to go through this, he said it's been tough. He joked a little bit, too, that he tried to watch the game with his wife, the Washington game, at a neighbor's house, lasted until the first quarter, then had to go back home to watch it alone. Just too much anxiety.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a guy that Aaron Rodgers has said it multiple times. Other teammates have said the same thing. The phrase absolute warrior comes to mind with T.J. Lang, with the number of games that he has played hurt, played through things. So you know this foot injury, obviously we found out yesterday that it was actually a broken foot. So yeah. And probably that might have been the only way a foot injury was going to keep him off the field is when the doctors literally said you cannot play. So we'll see how quickly he can come back. But we've seen the rookie Jason Spriggs fill in the last couple games at right guard, thrown into a tough situation, as we've talked about, as an offensive tackle throughout his college career and really throughout his entire football career as a lineman, gets thrown in at guard in the NFL. And his teammates have talked about it. It's like, hey, yeah, there were some rough moments at first, but, you know, like anything, the more he's doing it, the more snaps he's getting, the better he's getting. So even if Lang is not able to come back this week, this offensive line developing some confidence and continuity in the rookie Spriggs.
Yeah, that's been the most impressive thing, I think, about the line this year, is how they've kind of really just kind of rolled with the punches. Last year was a challenge. I mean, you look at that last game of the year, you know, Josh Sitton was playing left tackle. The first game of the playoffs, J.C. Tretter was playing left tackle, and Tretter did a fine job, but I don't think a lot of people projected him to be a starting left tackle in the NFL. His strength, in a lot of people's eyes, including the Packers, was center. So for Spriggs, 6'6", to have to get that knee bend down and you know, really grind inside there, especially against the kind of player that he was playing last week in Floyd, that's a difficult challenge. And as T.J. Lang said, for a young guy coming in and not taking a lot of reps at that position, he tipped his cap to him, and that being able to really adapt and adjust, that was key, because this offensive line, when you have that many injuries and that much shuffling going on with the inside, sometimes that can lead to some missed assignments and some mental errors that allow guys to come free, and that hasn't happened in Green Bay this year.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we did see that a little bit last year. You look at that regular season game in Arizona in December when the injuries were really hitting the unit hard and there was shuffling around going deep into the depth chart, and it became a jailbreak a couple of times there in terms of the pass protection. We haven't seen that this year. No. This offensive line, as you said, has really rolled with the punches and you know, protected Aaron Rodgers. I think it's been the best, most consistent unit on the entire team throughout 2016, and yet they still have had some injuries to deal with. This still has not been the picture-perfect health situation that they had in 2014 when hardly anybody missed a game.
Yeah, and one of Lang's thoughts on this were the big key to that is the fact that there have been injuries, but they've been able to keep their tackles healthy for the most part, outside of, you know, a little back injury and a knee injury to David Bakhtiari. Brian Bulaga pretty much has navigated this whole year without any really big incidents at all. So to have those two guys, those bookends there, that's who's taking on the premier pass rushers every week that are earning their money. Not to diminish anything that the interior line does, but if those guys are getting beat on the outside, that's where you start to see more of those jailbreaks happen. That's where you start to see it sort of snowball away from you. Bakhtiari and Bulaga haven't allowed them to do that. You and I talked last week on the show about the season that Brian Bulaga is having, but you know, even look at Bakhtiari and how he battles and usually taking on the best pass rusher that the opposing team has. Those guys have been key, and Lang tipped his cap to them and being able to really set the tone for that offensive line and keep things together despite some shuffling at those guard positions next to them.
Yeah, and the Packers too. Let's not be remiss. Really, two starting caliber centers that they have in Corey Linsley and J.C. Treader. Treader working his way back into practice now as well, along with Lang from his knee injury. No real indication at this point as to any change in the offing with Linsley, but this is a pair of guys that this team has really counted on.
Yeah, they have, and as Lang also pointed out, they look at both of those guys as starters. It's kind of a blessing and a curse because they're just, it's kind of like this tie goes to the runner kind of thing of them sort of running with the hot hand. They did it with Treader at the beginning of the season. They did it with Linsley when Treader got hurt in 2014. There isn't a whole lot to distinguish those two guys. And for the Packers, it's actually worked out pretty well to have both of those guys available when they have.
Yeah, for sure. With that, we'll throw it to a break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkiewicz there. And Wes, shifting gears to the offensive line of the Seattle Seahawks, if you were to pick one unit on their team that has maybe been the most up and down or been the most vulnerable at times for a very, very good, strong Seattle team, it would have to be the offensive line. This is a regime for everything that John Schneider and Pete Carroll have done and all the success they've had. They have essentially tried to replace the entire offensive line from those the Super Bowl team, the team that won the championship. It's pretty much an entire new unit. And between, you know, the trades and free agency and then injuries and whatnot, they just haven't been able to really put it all together. And when the Seahawks have had a rough game, and they've had a couple of rough games this year, it's been when that offensive line has had trouble.
Do you remember, this is probably like 2010, when the Milwaukee Brewers traded J.J. Hardy for Carlos Gomez? You remember that trade?
Yeah, sure.
Carlos Gomez became a gold glove center fielder for them, but then that shortstop position kind of fell into flux a little bit. That kind of reminds me what happened with this offensive line when they trade Max Unger to New Orleans. They do get Jimmy Graham, arguably the most dynamic, right in the conversation with Rob Gronkowski, the most dynamic tight end in the NFL.
Sure.
But left a huge hole at center for them. And it also, as it kind of turned out, created this domino effect through the offensive line. 2015 was a struggle for them. I think they went through, I want to say, three or four different starting centers. Well, this year, what they did is they took Justin Britt, who's played basically started at every position on the offensive line. I think he has starts at both tackle and guard. 6'6", not your traditional center, but that tends to be his best position. So they feel like they've improved there. But it left kind of a hole at left tackle now. Now you have George Fant is their starting left tackle. A lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainty on that offensive line. You go to that game 2 weeks ago against Tampa Bay, six sacks of Russell Wilson. That's not easy to do with the type of quarterback that he is.
Yeah, as elusive as he is, to bring him down six times, that doesn't happen very often.
No, and Seattle scored 5 points. So I think the times in which they've been beat this season, there tends to be a little bit of a correlation with what happened on their offensive line.
Yeah, and that pressure that Tampa Bay was able to get, some of that pressure also contributed to the two interceptions that Wilson threw. He's only thrown 5 interceptions all year. He threw two of them in that Tampa Bay game in a 14-5 loss where the Seattle defense gave up 2 touchdowns early and then completely shut down Tampa Bay the rest of the game and even scored a safety to try to help them get back in it. But the offensive line just wasn't able to get the job done. Now, the question for the Packers is, will they be able to take advantage of potentially some vulnerabilities on that offensive line? We found out that Nick Perry is out at least this week with what Mike McCarthy termed a significant hand injury. that'll be reevaluated next week, presumably to see if he can continue to play with a club as he tried to last week right after it got hurt, or if he's going to need some more time off. Clay Matthews is not 100% with the shoulder injury. He really played through a lot of pain and was not the Clay Matthews that that we like to see out there, whether it's inside or outside linebacker. Julius Peppers did miss practice on Wednesday for the Packers, but that was listed as not injury-related, so hopefully just a rest situation. But the Packers dealing with some issues with their pass rushers, and so you wonder how this matchup between the pass rush and the Seahawks offensive line is going to go.
That's going to be the biggest thing, because when you look at these matchups that they've had the last two times, particularly in the regular season, to some extent also the postseason game in 2014, it really kind of has come down to the defensive fronts. You think of that opener in 2014, the Packers were trying to run that quad. They really got gashed by Wilson and Lynch. Then they come back last year, I thought really set the tempo, did put the pressure on Wilson. They were also able to accomplish that for the most part in the first half of that NFC title game. So that is where this is going to start, winning those battles. You feel for Nick Perry. He's having the best year of his career. He's productive. I mean, already over 40 tackles. That isn't always easy to do as an outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense, but he's been effective.
Yeah, leading the team with eight sacks.
Well on his way to what appeared to be a 10-sack season. We'll see exactly what this means for him going forward. But with Kyler Fackrell still out with the hamstring, Matthews dealing with the shoulder, he won't practice until Saturday, it sounds like,
right,
trying to get some strength back there.
Right.
This is a difficult situation the Packers find themselves in now, trying to still get that pass rush together, get those guys healthy, but also being very cognizant of their health as well, because all those guys are really playing through some big things.
Yeah, when you look back to that 2015 game, the Sunday nighter here at Lambeau Field last year, it really started for the Packers with shutting down Marshawn Lynch defensively. And then that's what allowed them to get after Wilson. But also with Wilson, it's not always about the sacks. As great as Tampa Bay did with getting the six sacks, it's about rushing Wilson and containing him, because if nobody's open downfield, you know, this is a guy who can take off and move the chains in a heartbeat, you know, with his scrambling ability. And so really for the Packers, that the front needs to do the job against Thomas Rawls, and then the pass rush needs to – you need to get after him, but you need to be careful too. It's a tough situation.
And that's when you look at Matthews too. He is the best guy. I've heard this for 5 years now. When they want to look spy a quarterback, Matthews is your best option there.
Yeah.
He's probably the guy that could take that assignment on against Wilson, because it is a big challenge. But dealing with that shoulder injury, it just makes you curious about what he's going to be able to do. But that's what the week is for, and the Packers obviously will get to Sunday afternoon and put their best guys on the field. But definitely a lot for them to think about in their Tuesday planning meeting and how they're going to go about deploying this personnel.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, with that, we'll throw it to another break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, continuing our discussion from the last segment about the Packers pass rush, talking about the injuries, Nick Perry's out. Clay Matthews is not 100%. Kyler Fackrell, the young rookie who was showing some promise earlier on, remains out with a hamstring injury to this point. This is the type of game. Now, we will see certainly a fair amount of snaps, I would assume, from Jayrone Elliott, the third-year outside linebacker. But this is the game really where a lot of duty with regards to the pass rush could fall on the veteran Julius Peppers, and an instance where a little bit different than what the Packers have to deal with in other situations, where instead of turning things over to a rookie and a young guy to lean on, they have a veteran guy with Peppers' pedigree to try to make something happen here in a really, really big ball game.
Really difficult to navigate an entire season without having some kind of nick and bruise to your pass rushers. There's so much contact there, the nature of the position. You go back to 2012 and 2013, I think the Packers had to learn that kind of the hard way.
Yeah.
With some of the UFAs that they had to play in those positions, nothing against them, but there's a difference between Julius Peppers and Nate Palmer.
Yeah.
There just is.
Yeah.
So for them to be in this spot right now, they had a plan with him. You know, the course of action. I know Peppers probably wanted to play more earlier this season, but the fact of the matter is he's in a position now to be fresh with the last four games of the season. The Packers played him, I think, all but maybe 12 snaps of that last game a week ago. He's probably going to have to be a three-down player again this week. One thing that was interesting, I was working on the program for this week and talking with Nick Perry a little bit before the injury that he got, and he kind of really summed it up in that, you know, Julius Peppers can still make plays.
Yeah.
And in a way, he kind of said that he's really not getting the respect he deserves, maybe externally, in terms of what he can still bring at his age. 6.5 sacks, 3 consecutive sacks in a row these past 3 weeks. I think you're still seeing that Julius Peppers has plenty to give, and the Packers really need it at this point in time.
Yeah, and adjusting to the lesser role or the lighter snap load, you might say, we have to understand this is a bit of an adjustment for a guy like Peppers, too, who's used to playing throughout the majority of his career, is used to playing every down. And for him, you know, and he's talked about this with reporters, pass rush comes down to, you know, setting up moves, you know, with offensive tackles and stuff for later in the game. Well, when you're just getting thrown in there here and there and stuff, it's not just, okay, go out on the field and get a sack.
Right.
That's not really how it works. And so he's had to make some adjustments here. And as you said, as his playing time now has increased, he's got a sack in each of the last three games, which is the first time since the six-game winning streak to start last year that we've seen that from Peppers. So a veteran guy that the Packers need who seems to be heating up at the right time.
Yeah, and I think you talked to him this week. I mean, he sounds like a guy who's hungry. He wants to be in there. He feels fresh. This is kind of what he was built for, is this type of you know, situation. Also, I mean, mention Dayton Jones in that conversation, too. Here's a guy that's
I neglected to mention Jones. But, yeah, number 95 is going to see a lot of snaps.
He's going to see a lot of action. He saw a lot last week, and he's gotten within a sliver of his first sack here, it seems like, the past couple weeks, and it's kind of been coming on. Still looking for that, but he gives you that flexibility. They can use him as an end in the base package. He can also be, you know, he can stand up in that nickel and get back in the middle in the dime. He's really versatile in that way. The Packers are going to be leaning on both of those guys heavily in this game.
Yeah, for sure. But hey, Wes, before we go to a break, let's take care of some sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Subs' Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12, a deadline that is approaching quickly, by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, before we go, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Thursday night football game this week, the Chiefs against the Raiders. Now, we're taping this episode before the game is played. Some people might end up watching it after the game is played. But what I wanted to touch on is the fact this is a big game in the AFC West and in terms of the entire AFC playoff picture. And you've got two former Ted Thompson disciples, you might say, as the GMs of these teams, John Dorsey of the Kansas City Chiefs and Reggie McKenzie out there with the Oakland Raiders going head-to-head. Interesting to see the success that they've had and how things are going to shake out between those guys in the AFC West.
Yeah, and they've done it in entirely different ways. You look at Reggie McKenzie, it was a complete rebuild, having to take it down basically every position had to be restocked.
That was a salary cap mess that he inherited.
And, I mean, they lost the first-round pick his first year there because they traded it for Carson Palmer. And for him to put them in a position now to be 10-2, I think you look really savvy. Just great moves across the board. And to get them in this position says a lot about McKenzie and his ability as a personnel evaluator, but also just managing that whole organization.
Yeah.
And give credit to the Raiders, too. They gave him a lot of leniency for a number of years, gave him a lot of latitude to make it happen. John Dorsey, I don't think it was really the same situation. They obviously were coming off a losing skid there, but made the decision to get Alex Smith in there. And some of those, I think that 2013 draft he had was brilliant. So really competitive in that conference, that division. I think you can make an argument is the best one in football right now, and a really important game not only for the lead, but you know, just trying to make sure that you can shore up a playoff spot and as a wild card for whoever doesn't prevail.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see the these two guys, Dorsey and McKenzie, taking on their first GM jobs. They both seem to have been paired pretty effectively with veteran NFL coaches. Andy Reid now in Kansas City with Dorsey and Jack Del Rio in Oakland. You mentioned kind of the leash that they gave Reggie McKenzie. You know, they let him move on from Dennis Allen, his first head coaching hire. And some GMs don't survive if you swing and miss on that first head coaching hire. But they stuck with him. He brought in a veteran coach in Jack Del Rio, and both of those teams benefiting from those head coach GM combinations that seem to be working.
Yeah, and Andy Reid and John Dorsey go back years. I mean, Reid was obviously knew Dorsey from their time together in Green Bay when he was assistant coach. Dorsey had basically been a personnel executive his entire career with Green Bay and the Packers, so there was a history there. I thought the move to bring in Jack Del Rio was really smart, though. To be honest with you, I still think Jacksonville probably erred in not keeping him. I know sometimes there's that argument about trying to keep things fresh, but sometimes, especially in places where you don't have an established winning history, it's important to make sure you keep that face of the franchise in place. He went to Denver, had a lot of success now, doing some good things with Oakland and a very young team. Their defense needs to get better. Yeah. The talent's there. The stats aren't. But that offense is right where you need it to be.
Yeah, that that defense in Oakland, they've got the player to build around. And yeah. Khalil Mack, we talked about him in the preseason when he came here to face the Packers. But regardless of Thursday night's Chiefs-Raiders result, I think we're going to be seeing both of those teams in the postseason in the AFC. You?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I mean, the Kansas City's in the driver's seat now over that after that win over Denver. So
yeah, all right. And with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers. For the team account, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.